I gotta sit on a pillow because this chair.
What if
so
you?
Long.
What if you sit in, right next to Spencer, like we're on like a.
But
like
I
a,
think I like it.
Like
that
a Jesus
we're not
table.
Completely straight.
Like a Jesus table.
We all sit on the same side for dinner.
Oh, like the last.
Like the
supper.
Last supper.
Yeah, Jesus table.
Now this isn't gonna work because I can't hear myself.
Oh
so
yeah, you can.
I think this isn't recording. Once I hear myself, then I know we're recording.
That's not true at all.
Nothing's real until I can hear myself. Now we're ready to go. Okay, push that record button.
Okay, it's been recording for the last 2 minutes.
Ooh, you went back in time on me?
I sure did.
Well, you know what they say.
What do they say?
Welcome back to We Stayed Late.
Welcome back to We Stayed Late. This is the podcast where...
What?
What was that? Guys, we're in season 3. We really got to figure this out.
We got to figure it out. I think we're gonna.
I feel like we have seasons. That's right.
No, okay. So can I pitch something to you?
I pitch it.
Okay.
Pitch it, baby.
Okay. So I think I told you this before. I don't know if I told you this. Sorry, I'm pointing at people. Luis.
Yes.
This
that's
is
me.
An audio meme. Actually, it's
we
not
know.
Only an
we
audio
have
podcast.
A video.
There's a video on YouTube.com/WeStayedLate. You can go there and watch us live.
Yes.
Not live. You can watch us. In the flesh?
Yeah.
That's a weird...
I don't like that
phrase. That's a gross phrase.
I would
you can
say,
watch us in the flesh.
If
yeah.
you want to see what we're talking about, just subscribe. We
subscribe,
will not,
subscribe
we will not
YouTube.
Ever clarify for the audio listeners.
And you
there
know,
is an option for you.
You know, you might be listening. You're like, what do these people look like?
Yeah,
you know
they
I mean?
Might.
And then you finally look at us like, oh, that's how they look
gross.
Like.
Oh, gross. That's how they look is probably what
it's always interesting seeing a video podcast compared to an audio podcast.
Yeah, it is different.
You know, I
like
just
you get
saw
to
the
see people think. You
yeah.
get to see the thoughts that, you know, things are going on in
I just
eyes.
Saw the people from, what is that podcast?
Pod Save America.
Yeah, Pod Save America. I refuse to look at them because I have what I imagine them to be, and honestly, I can't tell their voices apart. So I never want confirmation. For me, they're just the amalgamation of like I can't say that word. I'm sorry.
Amalgamation.
Yes, that is. Of these like very righteous like democratic dudes
yeah.
where I'm like, well, okay.
I just saw them for the first time, and they looked. Pretty much how I thought they'd look.
What you expect.
Like a bunch of normal white dudes. Anyway, I want to pitch something to you. So I might have, when we've, this is a concept that I was going through. I just got a new backpack. Sorry, this is going to take a little
I
bit of a turn.
I noticed that backpack.
Yeah, okay.
It's
see,
a good
son,
backpack.
It's a
cool
good
solid,
backpack.
It's a
okay,
solid
I got
backpack.
It for, I got it for Christmas. Because my other backpack, I bought and the handle immediately fell off. And then the strap was also falling off. And I had it for like, you know, a couple of months, and it was just, anyway, I was really annoyed because I really like the backpack. So I'm there, and I'm cleaning out my old backpack, and I come across a note.
Okay.
That
okay.
I left myself.
Oh.
Not to myself, but, like, it's one of those things that I had transferred through all of my college bags.
Oh.
And
it
was
well,
now
it
in
survived
my backpack.
All the
yeah,
way through?
And it was old, like what old printer paper is like when it's been folded
so it's,
a bunch.
It's yes. a note from your past.
Yeah, but it had two triangles on it. Do you remember me telling you about this? I think I told you about it at SourceFed, but if you don't remember, I'm not
is
surprised.
This, something about like is with storytelling?
It's like acting, writing,
yes,
and real life.
I do remember
okay,
this.
So
oh, I vaguely remember.
Do you vaguely remember this?
That?
Okay, so I'm going to talk about it again because it came up in my life.
Do you and have I've a picture never, of it?
I don't. I
you need
I
to
didn't
take
bring
a picture
it.
Of it and then keep it. So
I know.
That,
I.
That's
yeah.
what I started to do when I take notes on paper. I take a picture of the notes and then it's like digitally saved.
Yeah. I just need to write it out on a Google Doc
that's
so
true.
It's there forever. But basically, the concept is there are two triangles. And we're talking about when we talk about like performance or mm-hmm. in acting or in movies or you know any media theater any of those mediums. So there's sort of like two different triangles, and one of them is – let's make sure I get this right, so I have to think about it. Hold on. One of them is action, intention, emotion. That's
one
the first triangle.
One at – oh, okay.
That's the first triangle is action, intention, emotion.
One at each point
one
of the
each
triangle.
Point of the triangle. The second triangle is acting, writing – and real life,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay, so we're gonna look at those two things sort of independently from each other. And I promise this is gonna come back and make sense, sort of.
Yes.
So, or yeah. It's gonna come back to a thing that I'm going to pitch you.
This is the We Stay Late masterclass.
Yes. So, We're going to talk about this sort of outlier right now. It's not the outlier, but if I was looking at a triangle, the bottom left and bottom right would be acting in real life.
Ooh, I love that.
And then the top of the triangle would be writing.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why is because writing takes those three sort of like ideas, the three ideas we talked about, and mashes them up a little bit. So basically the direction that writing takes is it is intention is first, because when you write a scene, it's what am I trying to do with this scene? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the intention of the scene?
So attention's at the top of the other triangle,
right? And then the second one is from intention, you write action. So you go, what do I want out of this scene? I want the characters to do this. Then I write the action.
I need money. This character needs money.
This character needs money. They're going to go rob a bank or whatever.
Great.
Then the emotion comes out of the writing that you've done, right? So you write the scene, and then that scene has some sort of emotional weight to it that comes out.
I need the money
of that
so that I could pay for my child's college fund.
Exactly. So out of the scene, hopefully, by having an intention and writing the action that follows that intention, you create emotion.
Mm.
Okay. So that's sort of the outlier. The one that's the most fascinating to me is when I started to break down. Hold on, I'm gonna adjust the microphone. Ooh, there we go. Look at that. Actually, sounds good now.
It sounds good.
When I started to break down acting and real life, and what I realized, why good performances are so hard, because a lot of people are just like, you could just pretend, but like acting is really hard.
Yeah.
When you actually
it's very
do, like
difficult.
Really good acting is really difficult, and so I was trying to break down for myself why that is, because I took directing. I was a directing emphasis in college, and so what I sort of realized is that those three factors that go into writing, which is what I was mostly doing, in college, I was analyzing scripts and trying to figure out, you know, like I was trying to get their intentions down and then write things and create emotion using that. What I discovered is that acting and real life are sort of opposites in this spectrum. So we start in real life with an emotion. That's the first thing that hits us, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm getting real anxious about doing this next
right.
task. Yeah.
So there's an emotion that hits us. That emotion leads us into an intention. It makes us do something, makes us want to do something,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we act on that intention, which makes it action.
Right.
So it's emotion, intention, action. Acting is the exact opposite. Acting starts with the action on the page. You read the action on the page, you get that action as an actor, and you have to interpret it. So a lot of times when you're taking an acting course or even a directing course, you go, what is the intention of this scene? What is the intention
right.
of this character? Right? So we're looking at action on the page. Then we analyze what the intention is, and then ultimately as an actor, it is your job to take both of those things and create emotion
right.
on screen. So that's why it's hard, because an actor is starting at the end
mm-hmm.
of what a normal human does.
Right.
So you have to, as an actor, you have to go all the way through that. You have to analyze a script, right? Analyze the action. You have to find the intention, get to the emotion, then erase the other two
yeah.
steps, and then find your way again from that base emotion to that intention and finally to action and make it match what's in the script and make it organic.
And a lot of people, sometimes they'll stick with just the intention.
Right.
And so they'll
yeah.
just like play the intention and not play the emotion to
right.
the situation. So that's,
right.
that's when you'll get bad acting.
Right.
Is people will be like, you're not telling the truth, instead of like someone who's actually like offended
of,
by something.
Instead
yeah.
of emotion. Yeah.
Emotion,
and then, but in the important part there is not just to get to emotion. The important part is to start the scene with the emotion and work your way to action so that you are doing what real people do.
Right.
You feel that anxiousness.
That's why there's like method actors who are like, I am trying to like get into it so that they're starting at the
yeah.
emotion.
Well, even before a scene starts, like when you jump into the scene, there's always the thought beforehand.
Yeah.
So I'm
yeah.
coming in. Where am I coming mm-hmm. from before the scene
right.
comes?
Right, exactly.
And so you're coming
exactly.
from a starting point that you can just launch right into. And that'll propel you through your like emotions, and then feeding, and then hopefully having a partner
who
can help feed you too. Because
yes.
you're throwing an emotion at me that I instinctively in my gut am going to react to, but it's also has been orchestrated and you know, what's it called? Painted in such a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With the way that they're through their choices.
Yes.
Through their creative choices.
Yeah. And so you have to, as an actor, find your way, allow yourself to be open enough to get to that emotion, but also be trained enough to be able to find your way back to the correct action.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Unless you get lucky and there's like those accident scenes, like what's his name breaking his toe in Lord of the Rings, and they kept it in because his facial expression was so good.
Yeah, he got stabbed in the foot
also
or something.
Well, I mean, that's because it's coming from a true emotion.
It's coming from
true
emotion.
Because it's like, it's like that's for real.
That's the thing. You erase the rest of it and just use true emotion, and that's why sometimes those improv moments can be the gold,
right?
Because they are coming from an
emotional
space.
A lot of the best parts of Parks and Recs were from like.
Yeah,
just improv-y moments so that you had the real reaction.
The Office too.
Yeah,
I mean, there are the Office and Parks and Rec are certainly scripted, but every once in a while you get those moments that are just gold, and they are they're improv. So anyway, that idea, the idea of triangles and of threes, again came back into my life because it is something that is pervasive throughout the universe in some way.
Threes. Oh yeah,
things in threes.
I truly believe. Yeah.
So. I want to pitch, at least for this episode, we do a three-act structure.
What?
Here's the three-act structure I want to pitch, at least for this episode.
I forgot
episode.
Where we started from, to be honest.
Right.
The whole time I was just like, where is this going, Spencer?
Don't worry
where
about
is this going?
I'm weaving it all back around. Good. Okay, so I think that I want to pitch a three-act structure, and again, it's going to have sort of this triangle feel. So the first one, let me make sure I get it right. Hold on, let me think about it. The first one is... something that I will remember. Hold on.
Wait a minute.
Oh, God. Hold on.
You're remembering.
Wait a minute.
These are the thoughts of
our
remembering.
Spencer's remembering.
Yes. The very first thing I want to... Oh, yeah. The very first thing I want to do is inspiration. Then I want to do perspiration. Then I want to do anticipation. So here's the reason why. Is because I've been thinking about my own life recently in threes.
Okay.
And I've been trying to like balance my life in a similar, not my entire life,
that's
but
beautiful.
Like my creative life in a similar way. And what I mean by that is I've been doing a lot of perspiration, which is like the thing I'm working really hard at.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Like working really, really hard at something.
Okay.
But I haven't been letting myself gain enough inspiration or have enough anticipation to feel like I haven't been inspired enough, and I haven't been looking forward enough. I've just been looking down at the ground where I am, which sometimes is really good because it makes you
it makes you focus.
Be in the moment and focus.
Right.
And but so you could finish the thing.
Right, totally. And that is a huge part of it, which is why there are three parts. But when you don't look at the future and you don't look at like, what do I want to do? What? How is what I'm doing going to impact the next year of my life?
Right.
And what do I want to do? What makes me excited in the next year of my life? Other than the thing that I'm doing right now, because sometimes when you're working on a thing right now, you get so not bogged down, but like tunnel visioned that for me anyway, I lose sight of the future.
That is what we need to swap places is what needs to happen. I have a lot of anticipation, but no
perspiration.
That's weird. I'm in the like inspiration part. I'm like always like, oh man, I want to just like make all these things. Look at these ideas. Look at this stuff. Like
we've
I just want to do these
done
stuff.
It. You
things.
Are inspiration. I am perspiration.
I'm
you
anticipation.
Are anticipation. We are the three horsemen.
What house do you follow under?
Yeah. Let us know what house you fall under. No. So my goal is to find more of a balance for myself. So I've been trying to do that by watching more shows that are outside of the thing that I'm doing currently.
Very cool.
And also by just keeping a log of like things that make me excited, even if they aren't projects. It's like, what is something that I want to do? Like I'm going to go on vacation soon.
Right.
In February, I'm going on vacation. And that's something I'm excited for. And I have to remind myself that like, hey,
yeah,
you need to like let yourself be excited for this thing and not think about everything you're doing right now in the next 24 hours, because then you can get not depressed, because I'm not depressed, but it's like you're
stressed out.
Yeah, you get stressed.
Well, it's also like working the same muscle over and over again.
Yes,
I'm gonna go work out and I'm gonna work out his biceps. Oh yeah, every day, and then your arm
arm hurts so bad,
and the rest of your body's compensating. Like, okay, I guess we're doing biceps, but my back is like not working.
Yeah,
and my shoulders are fucked. So you're saying you need more,
yes.
You can find relief by working the other parts of your body,
exactly.
The other parts of your brain.
And I found that doing that has helped me be better at the perspiration step. Because I have more inspiration to do things.
Right.
And two, I'm not as like bogged down and this has to be the best thing in the whole world. And it's the only thing that matters.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about that on the way over and I was like, that would be a cool way, at least for this episode, to divide the structure of our discussion. So the first one I want to do is inspiration. So we'll talk about something that is inspiring us, something that we're a podcast or a movie,
right.
Or a TV
Ooh.
Show, something that's making us feel inspired. Then the second part, we'll talk about what we're working on. And
yes.
I think part of perspiration is also talking about the struggle. So not just like, oh, I'm working on this thing and it's going really great, but like, what has been really hard for you? What have you been facing? Like, what hardships have you faced in doing that? What have you found works and what have you found doesn't? And, you know, what, like, and if you're not, what do you, if you're not working on something, because sometimes we take breaks, obviously, from working on stuff.
Right.
Like, what is the thing that's gnawing at the back of your head? Because I always have things that are like, I want to do this thing. And then anticipation is what's something in your future foresee, like, what's something that you see as being exciting or invigorating or, I don't know, even nerve-wracking in a way.
Yeah.
Like, anticipation can sometimes not be a solely positive thing.
Right.
So what's something in your future that you're anticipating you're going to have to deal with in a good or bad way? Does that sound like a plan?
Dude, yeah, that's
perfect.
Fine.
Okay.
That's
okay,
perfect.
Cool. So let's start with inspiration. Does anybody have anything they want to talk about? I have something I can talk about if nobody else does.
I love it.
If somebody wants to think.
Inspiration. Spider-Man.
Spider-Man?
Into the Universe is
yeah.
still really inspiring.
What about it is inspiring you particularly?
You can talk
about mostly because here's the thing. A good chunk of the artists for the movie, they're all on Twitter. And they keep posting
that.
Like they're behind the scenes. Like they're so proud of what they did
yep.
that they keep posting how they did it.
Yeah.
And like breakdowns and like character things.
I've seen
like,
a lot of fan stuff too that
yeah,
makes me so excited.
The fan stuff is great, but it's really the stuff coming from the people who made the movie that
yeah.
every time they like drop a new like, this is how I broke down this scene. Like it's animated on twos, but this part's animated on ones and we did this to achieve this
What's
effect.
That mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so you know how there's 24 frames a second
yeah.
in
yes.
animation? When you're animating on two, I might be wrong on this, when you're the reason like CGI and everything looks so smooth is because they're filling in all of those frames.
Mm,
so
yeah,
that's what
yeah,
gives
yeah.
you that smooth effect. Well, animation takes a long, like hand drawn takes a long time to draw, so people will break it up into chunks. So like every two frames in that
right,
second will be
yeah.
like, and while everything else is kind of like filled in, or
right.
they just won't fill it in. Your brain fills in the rest. So that's why old school animation kind of looks choppy because they're just
yeah.
kind of like boop, boop, one, two, one, two, one, two.
Right.
Because it's expensive to do all those
yeah.
stuff in between.
It's the in-betweeners that they have to hire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So most animation, like modern day animations animated like on, I want to say 12s. So it's smoother and particularly CGI, it's like super smooth, all that stuff. Spider-Man is not. They, in order to achieve that comic book cartoony effect in CGI, they animated it on twos. However, for certain scenes, when they want it to be smoother,
right.
they go to the traditional style. So it's
ah.
a mix. The whole movie is a big mix
ah,
of
interesting.
These different animation frames. So they're so like today, the guy who animated, this isn't a spoiler, it's in the trailer.
It's fine.
There's a little moment of Gwen Stacy doing drums.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He's like, I'm a drummer. I wanted that scene. And then he was like, oh, shit, this is hard. It's one thing to know how to do drums. It's one thing to animate, to learn how to do those two things together. Holy crap.
Right.
So he broke down on how he did it. He recorded his friend doing the drums. And then he started talking about how, like Gwen Stacy in particular, since she's like kind of punk rock, but she's also like a ballerina.
Uh-huh.
She plays punk rock using a jazz stance. I had no idea.
Wow.
So he's doing that. And then he shows while the camera's turning, he's like, okay, so the drums are actually animated on ones and she's animated on twos. So the drums are moving slightly faster than she is. So she has slightly smoother animation, but not super smooth, still on twos.
Right.
While the drums are moving a little faster, a little choppier to achieve this kind of like 3D-esque weird effect. And then he showed like the filler lines because when you do that, this is where you get animation smears.
Uh-huh.
Where like, if you ever like freeze frame on an old cartoon, especially cel-shaded, the in between, you'll see like these weird smudges to indicate action lines. So, like, for comics, right. you'll see okay. that a lot, where it's just, like, a hand is motion, but you'll see, like, four hands to right. kind of give you that idea to for your brain to fill in the motion. So they do that in Spider-Man a lot, too, because they're trying to make it look like a comic book.
Totally.
So you see, like, all these extra marks of, like, the thing, and those are hand-drawn in.
Wow.
With the CGI. It's so crazy. So I'm, like, just looking at them, like, this is just beautiful art, and it makes me want to learn how to animate. Even though, like, obviously this was a team. These are people who, like I'm not going to ever be one of these intense animators.
Right.
But, man, I'd still like to just make some, like, little shorts and, like, little storyboards and, you know, dabble with it a little bit more, because I love seeing all this stuff. And it also helps me incorporate it into comics. I'm like, oh, yeah, I should use smears more.
Yeah.
I could use that. I could actually do that.
You just got the book, too, right?
No, it never came in.
Oh, man.
Somebody ordered it for me for my birthday. I don't know who did, because I can't contact them because I don't know who sent it. And it never arrived. So I don't know if either maybe the person had to cancel their order.
Oh, maybe.
Which is possible, which is fine. Let me know so I could go buy the book, because I feel like...
I know. I won't. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to come in eventually, and I'm going to buy the book, and it's going to be great. And I'm just going to stare at it and go, like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, when you see the trailer for that movie, the first thing you're like, whoa, this is something new.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at the animation, it's like, this is incredible. There's people who have broken down the trailer, too, where they're like, it's other anime. I follow a lot of animators on Twitter just because it's the world. And they'll break down, like Miles jumping from things. And they did, apparently a big thing they did is, like, the background is animated on a different frame rate than the characters to make them look like old school cartoons, like cell shading. Because old school cell shading characters would be on a cell and the background would be on another cell. So in order to achieve that effect, they animate them at different rates. It's so really neat.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah,
that is
something. It's not off putting in a negative way, but it's off putting in a good way. Like, it keeps me on my toes.
It's inspirational in a way that I'm like, I want to learn how to do this stuff and do it, but not in a way that intimidates me, because I also recognize, I'm like, oh, this is a whole other skill set.
Yeah.
I don't have that skill set, but I really appreciate, like, knowing it. It's like watching a musician play, and I'm like, man, I can't do that, but this is amazing. I really like seeing what you do. That's cool.
Sadly, the effect for me was, like, the opposite of what Peter Jackson did for The Hobbit, where he just made everything...
Super smooth.
And that made it a worse experience for me.
Yeah, if you fill in too much, that's the thing. It's like your brain, like, that's why I love that this movie is getting awards and stuff, because it's showing what you can do with CGI in a way that you could still go back to original traditional animation and use the skills from that
the
techniques. Not just, like, abandon it completely and bring it back and do it in a different way. So it's like, as much as I love Pixar, I really hope, like, this continues to win to show what you can do and push the boundaries.
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, and that's the thing. Like, I appreciate the ingenuity of not that I'm a fan of The Hobbit, but I appreciate them trying something different, right?
Yeah.
Like, whenever you try something different, there's always the chance it's just going to fail completely. And
don't you wish there were just awards for, like, stuff of, like, hey,
you
man,
push the boundaries.
You tried. Like, I want you to keep making more stuff like this, even if it doesn't work, because, man, at some point, this could work.
I know.
You know?
It's so important. And that's something else about that's hard about, like, this whole industry, is that when you fail so publicly. And I think that there is people judge those public failings very harshly, and when you think about a lot of those people that go through that are just people. They're just people, and they're trying to do something new. Like, we need to be able to fail publicly and be okay with it. Yeah. Our society kind of isn't right now, just because of the nature of, like, fame and who we are and the internet and things being spread so quickly. And, like, I don't know. There's something about, you used to be able to fail publicly a lot. Not that I would know, but I would assume you could fail publicly a lot more.
It's, you can do it when there's other people who essentially, like, have done it well so many times that it's the thing of, like, oh, like, whenever there's, like, a new female director.
Yeah.
Like, they
can't fail publicly. Yeah.
Because if they do, it's like, oh, well, see, that's what happens when you take a chance on this thing.
Right.
However, if there's, like, a whole bunch and one of them fails, it's like, oh, that one failed. Maybe that's just, like, an individual person and not, like, the whole group of people.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why, like, it's like I like Crazy Rich Asians. the story is like it's cute. It's not like necessarily it's breaking boundaries in the sense of showing a culture that you don't normally see.
But it's just as good as the rom-coms that we have.
Yeah,
in the
and
past.
That's the thing.
Like,
it's
a
just
classic rom-com.
It's just a classic rom-com. It doesn't really push the boundaries of a rom-com in any way. It stays within the genre. And I'm like, well, the reason it did is because they know this is a formula that is long. Don't mess with this formula, because if it fails, like, it's would be more catastrophic, like, overall than, like, if it was just any other rom-com story. Like, they'd be like, oh, okay, whatever. But this one had so much pressure on it to do well that they didn't, like, really push the boundaries on the story.
Totally. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think that, you know, before the internet, before we had phones, and before we had cameras in our pockets, you could sort of like, you could do things and try things. And it's just hard now because now everybody sees everything that happens. And that makes it really difficult.
Well, I mean, people put it out there.
Well, but
You could experiment and just be like,
it's true. But if you showed them back when cinema was first starting, right? And they were experimenting a whole lot to find the language of cinema and how things are supposed to be made. And they're really like trying a bunch of different stuff, like the triptychs and all these things. By the way, the movie Napoleon was shot on triptych, which was three different screens that showed three different images at the same time. And sometimes they would collide into be one huge image together that was like the whole battlefield, and it completely blew people's minds.
Yeah.
And that was a thing that they just tried, and it worked really well for that, but it could have not worked at all. It did a really cool,
like... It
needed
to be like an epic story for
right,
that to
work exactly. out. And so they had this whole Kuleshov effect thing where they were putting two images next to each other, and the audience was able to interpret a third image based on those two, but they did it with three screens, so the audience was interpreting even more ideas, so it lent itself to, like, creating this really cool spectacle. But they could try that in a town and see if it worked. And if it didn't,
well, if you guys want, and this is for the audience too, although
it's just harder
if you do live in LA, it helps, but you could submit from anywhere. This is why I recommend Channel 101.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you literally make a thing. You make, and they have their guidelines, which is 5 minutes, but you could do it pretty much, and ideally a narrative. I've seen people not do narratives and still get in, but ideally a narrative, it's a 5-minute thing, you submit it online, and it gets a screening at the end of the month, and an audience votes whether it stays or not. But you could experiment and play around, because a lot of people do weird shit.
Yeah.
And sometimes 100%. It works and sometimes it doesn't. But when it works, you're like, oh, that was really different. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good place for experimentation.
Yeah.
Anyway, something that is inspiring me, I just started listening to a new podcast. Actually, I've been listening to a couple of new ones, but the one that sticks in my head right now is something called Cited. And Cited has been really good. It's Cited, C-I-T-E-D.
Oh, okay. I was like Cited, like eyesight.
No, like C-I-T-E-D. And it is sort of a mix of investigative journalism and storytelling and academic research. All those things sort of colliding into one. It's put on by, does it say what? I think it's the University of British Columbia who does it. And there are some really good episodes. The one I'd listen to, the one I recommend to start with is, let me find it so I get the name right. Let me scroll down. What would our world be like without numbers? So there are a couple of, there are a couple of civilizations.
No, thank you.
That don't have names for numbers that exist right now.
Really?
Yes. And so they talk to people that have done studies with the people that don't have numbers.
How do they? How do you communicate passage of time?
So I don't know. They didn't talk about that. it'd be something you could definitely more research on.
Sincerely, because like, how do you go? But I need to. How old are you? How many? Like.
Yeah. I don't think that they track that necessarily. So here's the thing. They have some of the cultures have ideas of. Just trying to remember accurately. They have ideas of like what
of quantity,
a grouping might be. So that might be like, oh, go grab some berries, right?
Okay.
So it's like that's like more than one,
right?
But not a ton,
right?
So they have the idea of like what quantity.
So they
is.
Have like none, some, and a lot,
Right.
And maybe the extra bonus a shit ton.
I didn't read the research, so I just know what was in the interview in the podcast. So definitely go listen to it to get the full picture of what this is, because I don't want to inaccurately quote it.
I'm just trying
it.
To imagine how do you interpret even the future?
Our recording is stopped.
Oh, yeah. Oops. We're filming on something else different. Hold on.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Dogging. This is the advantage for the audio, folks.
Exactly.
They get this chunk.
Well, they'll get this, but it'll just be...
It just won't have any video over the top of it. So the other interesting thing is that they were looking at the way they wanted to measure was how much do these people not know numbers? Because there's an inherent thing that we think that...
Hey, you look at your hands and you see digits. Right?
Like if you see two leaves on a table in front of you,
you know that there's two of them.
You know that
conceptually.
There are. Yeah, conceptually, you know that there are two.
Yeah.
So here's where the complication comes in. They would do this interesting thing where they took batteries because they had an understanding of what batteries were or something, and they laid out the experimenters laid out a bunch of batteries. I'm peeking. Hold on. Laid out a bunch of batteries on a sort of a table, right? Just on something. And they laid out three or four, and then would scoop them up, and then have the people go and put the amount of batteries they thought were put down on the table on the table, and they would put three or four. So they got that.
Uh-huh.
Once it moved past, I think they said four. It became really tough for them. They were basically just guessing. So what they realized is that some societies that don't have numbers have the idea of numbers, but it would be the same it's the same for them, sort of, as if somebody laid down 100 batteries before you had the chance to count it.
Okay. And we have to try to scoop
them up and you had to put the same amount of batteries on the table.
It's okay. So it's like how we have a hard time conceptualizing a community over 100 people. Like humans innately can our empathy generally extends to about 100-150 people.
Yeah.
Anything after that, that's why we have othering and all that stuff, because it's very difficult for us to imagine more than that as individuals.
Totally. And it's the same idea of you go to a concert, and unless you know the venue pretty well or you're good at... Sorry, I'm just adjusting this really quick.
Your pop filter's touching the thing. That's also why.
You go to a concert, unless you're really good at estimating people already or estimating groups already, or you know the venue.
Right.
If I ask you how many people were at that concert,
you have no idea.
Right. Same thing. It's the same concept where there are too many for you to have an accurate count. So they said that's sort of what it is for them. But what's also interesting is that they've taught primates and also some birds the ability to count up to nine and recognize that there are nine copies of a thing, basically, that they can count up to nine.
Uh-huh.
But past that, it's sort of impossible for them. Not impossible, but it is.
It's harder.
It's much harder for them to conceptualize. And so they also go into this really interesting, in the latter half of the podcast, they go into this really interesting thing about the number nine is really interesting to us, because when we jump over to the number 10, a lot of things are in base 10. And the reason why is because we have 10 fingers.
Yeah.
And if we did, and I don't want to spoil everything, but just posing the concept of if we did not have 10 fingers, would we? There are other languages that don't have base 10. There are there are counting things that are not base 10. But think we take for granted that when we hit the number nine, that then a one goes next to it and a zero becomes the new digit in place.
Right.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have that base 10, it could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then 8 could be the thing that jumps over to having another digit in front of it. Just as easily.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. And that's just a thing that exists in our society, and we take it for granted.
Yeah, that's why, like, when like,
it's just crazy.
When
it's crazy.
Fantasy writers and stuff make, like, number systems and stuff, that's always weird shit like that, where they're like, oh, it's base 7 and base, like, and I'm like, why did you do that? My brain can't handle it.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, they go into the origin of all of that, and they talk about languages where things aren't base 10, where they're base 6, and what it means, and how, and, like, one of them was, like, the reason why it's base 6 is because, that's the number of yams they kept together. They would keep 6 yams.
But how
together.
Would that work with, like, physics and math? Like, do you just start changing it so that everything is base 6 and base 10, like, base 7? Because 10
honestly,
works
I don't
so
know.
Well. Like, it's just
But
like,
it only works so well because that's what we know.
But it also, it's
like,
even. Like,
it's
if you
like
have
miles
six,
versus...
What,
it's
6,
like,
3, 3, 7
but
would be
the
harder.
Reason, but the reason why it's even is because we've established that 5 and 10 are even.
Right.
5 and 10 are what we round to. They talk. They do a whole thing about this in the podcast about why we see those numbers as being even.
Yeah.
And our brain has been trained since we were young.
Yeah, I can't do kilometers, even though that's base 10, because we were trained in miles. In my head, I'm like, I know how a mile feels, physically feels.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I could relatively estimate when I'm
running.
When I run or walk, I could kind of be like, this feels like I'm pretty close to a mile. If you told me kilometer, even though I've done kilometers too, I couldn't pinpoint it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? Because
it's what you're born and bred with.
But I do know 3.1 miles. I know that's a 5K. So I know if I feel like around 3, I'm close to a 5. But I couldn't break it down to a 1. I couldn't tell you a 10. I just have 5K and 3.1-ish in my head. But kilometers throw me off every time, and I'm like, well, I wish I had learned this base 10 system, but it's weird.
So our math would be completely different if we were base 7 or something like that.
Right. But it would be fundamentally the same.
We kind of have a little bit of base 7 because of the way we do our calendar. We could kind of get into it because we know what 2 weeks feels like. Instinctually.
14 days. 7 days.
Because of how we do our calendars.
Yeah. No, it's very odd. But anyway, go listen to the episode because I just skimmed the surface.
Did you know the same thing happens with colors?
Cool.
Yeah. Green and blue are basically indistinguishable.
Yeah, green. Blue is new, you guys.
Blue is new.
Blue is
very
new.
Blue is not in the Odyssey, right?
No.
The Odyssey nowhere says the word blue. He never describes anything
in
the Odyssey as blue.
Back in the day, it is believed. Yeah, that's the thing. Green.
Green.
Sky is green.
Yeah.
So the trees and the sky are the same color?
Yeah.
Like in the sense of like how like the ocean and the sky are sometimes similar colors of blue, but not really. You know how sometimes the ocean looks green? Sometimes the ocean looks blue. So as a result, the sky kind of has a similar thing where it's like, oh, that's just a different kind of green.
Well, I've heard this thing where certain tribes only see in like 4 colors.
Only have names for those colors. Mm. That's
the
difference.
And the thing too, the more names you have for colors, the more colors you see.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild? Just because
what is that called? A mantis shrimp? Then you see like 120. You have 126 cones or something. Oh. Anyway, it doesn't. It's not. It doesn't actually see more colors.
Isn't orange
just
a new color too?
It just sees.
Because everyone compared it to red.
Maybe.
I always thought orange
heard
was
that
a new
orange
color.
And red orange are like in the
that's
same.
Sure.
They're like in the same range. They're just certain colors, particularly blues, are just not found in naturally. One of the few things that has blue are like certain butterflies.
And flowers.
There's not a lot of blue flowers. There's purple flowers.
What about blueberries?
Blueberries.
They're not blue. When you look at them, they're kind of more like blackish purple. They're not blue. Like when you think of like a cerulean blue, all that.
The sky. That's
like,
the only thing.
The sky. The sky is like a baby blue. And even then, half the time it's gray or white. It's not always blue.
Yeah, it depends on where you are.
Listen, I want my blue to be there from the beginning of time.
It has not been. If you look at ancient paintings, there's rarely any blue in it. Everything that you would think would be blue is tended to be like a greenish tint.
When did blue kick in and be like, hey, baby, I'm here?
I want to say after. I don't know.
There's
I'm
no
guessing.
Internet.
I just remember seeing the information about.
Oh, there's
like,
no Wi-Fi. I can do it on my phone.
I just remember seeing stuff about like the ancient Greeks didn't see blue.
Well, I want to differentiate. They saw blue.
They saw blue.
They didn't
just
identify blue as blue. They identified it.
Genuinely think that they saw it more toward a green because even with their paint and stuff, like they just never. It was always described as greenish.
All right.
So it's like the difference of someone showing you two different whites and being like, this is an egg white and this is a pearl white.
Right.
If you don't literally sit there and put them side by side and study it, you're not going to tell the difference.
Green and blue. Interesting.
It began when the Catholic Church made an important move in the year 431 AD.
Yeah, because the Mother Mary had always had blue. She always wore blue around her. And that's kind of like her color.
Yeah.
Anytime Mary was
But I don't think that's when it... I don't think that's the...
No.
It's also finding the paint color. Like, the more paints you could find, certain colors are... It's like I said, blue is very hard to find, like, naturally for paint.
I just read that and realized that that's when it became important as a...
Color
in our society, but that's not when, like, it was...
Just like purple for clothing was
okay.
Like a thing.
I mean, here's something. This is from my Modern Met, so take it with a grain of salt. But there's a long list of things we can thank the ancient Egyptians for inventing, and one of them is the color blue. Considered to be the first ever synthetically produced color pigment, Egyptian blue was created around 2200 BC.
Interesting.
So that's interesting. But it's what we would call blue, right? So I still haven't found, like, when was blue...
I'll try if you're in the Slack. I'll try to find the original video that discussed this. That I was just like, say what? What are you talking about?
Okay.
And post that.
About 150 years ago, a British scholar named William Gladstone was studying Homer's The Odyssey and noticed that the poet had some unconventional descriptions of color. For instance, honey was described as green, while iron
I'm eating right now
was called violet. You're eating honey?
Yeah.
Ooh, nice. Stick of honey.
Like a stick of honey.
Locally sourced?
I think so. I hope so.
Iron was called violet. However, no mention of blue existed. Similar investigations into ancient texts of a number of other languages were also missing any mention of the word blue. In fact, the first mention of blue wasn't found in any language until about 4,500 years ago. There you go.
Wow.
So anyway, there's a whole article. We can share it. But yeah, it's fascinating. So that is what is inspiring me.
That's awesome.
That's great. You guys have some great inspirations.
What have you been?
That's the easy part. Inspiration's real easy.
What's inspiring me? I have such an ADD brain. I forget what happened yesterday, and I just forget my inspirations.
Well, you know, I don't want to impose.
Oh, impose.
But
I think when people impose.
But I think this might be an opportunity for you to recap the book that you just finished.
Are we talking about Harry Potter?
Yes, please. Oh, my God. Please, 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 please.
Harry Potter.
Don't die.
Harry Potter. Yeah, I finished book. The book.
Which one?
What was it? The Order of the Phoenix.
Oh,
ooh,
yeah.
You got through Angry Harry.
And, you know, I finished it in Christmas. So it was a while ago.
Yeah.
And I think two things stuck out at me. One, really what stuck out at me was Sirius' death. I don't know why. I think it was because it happened so quickly.
Yeah.
And
I didn't believe it at first. I was just like, that's not how you go. That doesn't make any sense.
That's exactly
and
what
I was
happened
like,
to me.
What?
I kept flipping back and forth expecting him to come back.
Yeah.
I don't think he's coming back, but the way that he was written.
It was so fast.
It was very fast. And he had like, haha. Suck it, you know what I mean? Kind of feel, and then he just immediately dies.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too because the way that she does that is, it's so great. Not great's a bad word, but it's so accurate in that death happens so fast, and it occurs, and you just don't. You aren't prepared for it, and it takes you off guard.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, somebody's alive 1 minute, and then the next minute, like...
And it's just gone.
And there's... Yeah, usually... I mean, you know, except in specific cases where it's like...
A
something,
hospice situation.
Right, or cancer. Or cancer that they've seen ahead of time or whatever. Like, when tragic things happen, the person's just gone all of a sudden. And so it's... In a way, when I remember reading that when I did the reread, and it was like, it hit me because it was like, that's really how it is.
Yeah, it hit harder on a reread.
Yeah.
Mind you, like, I think the first time I read that book, that was the first one I ever binged because by I had, like, when I started getting into Harry Potter, the first four books were out and the fourth one had just come out. So I read all that, cried over Cedric from book four, and I was like, oh my God.
Cedric.
And then book five came out and I was just like, oh, and I read that all through a night. And so, like, I also.
Wait. You read the whole book in one night?
Oh, I did that with every time. Every time the books came out, I stayed up like 18 hours straight just reading.
Oh, my God.
I got home at midnight, read. Except the last one. I actually took a break to sleep But the other ones, I did not sleep. I just stayed up and read them. And I was like, I just, because I didn't want spoilers and I just needed it.
Yeah. I'm reading them on a Kindle, so I don't know how big that they actually are.
They're like this thick. The fifth one's like this thick.
And I went to my friend's house, and he has the first edition, the British actual, like, you know, British version, first edition. And I just saw how progressively much they grew. And it doesn't feel that way when I'm reading it, just because the story structure is the same. And so when I noticed, I was like, holy shit, I could go back and reread the first book in no time.
Oh, yeah, you blaze through those.
And this last book, I felt, you know, it was like the longest one, and it felt like the same. It felt like the same to me. I don't know what I was saying at this point. But, oh, yeah, I can't believe you read all of that in one night. That seems insane.
When the words would get blurry, I realized, like, oh, sorry, you haven't eaten. You need to eat something. So, I would go, like, get a snack and stuff and just be like, I just need to know what happened. So, yeah, when the serious thing happened, I'm, like, still, like, I'm binging it. So I'm like, that can't be right. Yeah. And I went back. I stopped, looked back. I was like, nah, he's coming back. And then just kept going. Like, I didn't let myself process it.
It's crazy.
Until, like, afterward, I'm like, that, no.
Yeah.
No.
It's a very visceral effect that she gives you.
Then I went back and took my time and read it, and I was just like, oh, all right.
And it just crushed me when Harry Potter at the end opens up his luggage and he finds the mirror.
Right?
I put my Kindle down. I was like, no, absolutely not. That was it's heartbreaking to me to think that.
He had that the whole time.
He had that the whole time, and we went through all these like attempts to talk to him.
Because all of us forgot that mirror was there too.
Yeah, I forgot about the mirror. And so I don't know what it was about that moment. Like, yeah, we talked about the whole, like, oh my God, what's his name? Not Gandalf. Dumbledore. When Dumbledore is revealing everything that's basically happened, like the whole, like, Harry Potter, whatever, prophecy and all that. Like, sure, all of this is great. It was all information that was being thrown at me. But for some reason, just emotionally, when he opens up that luggage and he reveals the mirror, to me, that was so tragic.
Oh, yeah.
That the answer was right there next to him. Time. And I don't know.
Also, fuck you, Snape. God damn it, if you just.
Yeah,
well, such a shit.
It gives you this feeling of like it was there the whole time. And for some reason, that resonates with me where it's like you could have done it the whole time. It was right there. All you had to do was just look. And I just connected with that feeling really hard for some reason.
Interesting.
But. Yeah, I don't know. That was like the big takeaway was that mirror for some reason. Just like the way that
I could see why like you're settling and like sitting and observe like sort like not jumping into the next book right away to kind of like sit with that.
Yeah, because it's a heavy feeling and I can't like think about just going on to the next book.
Yeah,
because it just throws everything
away.
You want
to wait like 2.5-ish years then you have the actual
experience. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to start reading the next book soon. But what else was I going to say? The prophecy. Okay, can I ask you a question about this prophecy business?
Sure.
So apparently the person who did the prophecy was, what's her name, who's not very good at giving prophecies?
Trelawney.
Okay, why does anyone like trust her that she's telling the truth here if she's terrible at giving prophecies at this point?
You've seen it before in book 3 that she gave it, how what happens when she gives an accurate prophecy. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
In book 3, he's with her taking a test.
Okay.
And the room is kind of foggy and weird and all this stuff. And he's worried about Hagrid's whole situation with Buckbeak and everything and all of that. And she kind of goes in through a weird, she like passes out and goes in through a weird trance. And she's all like, the Dark One will be returned to his master. His master will return tonight. And like, she like does not, she's like not her.
Right.
She like blanks out and just like repeats a thing like blah 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 blah, blah. Okay. And then like she doesn't even remember.
So
she's
becomes
saying
a vehicle for whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. She doesn't remember her. She doesn't actually do it.
Okay.
She doesn't remember it herself because he was just like, that's weird. And then when he asked her about it, she's like, oh, what are you talking about?
Right.
So.
Okay.
That's how. And Dumbledore.
I'm a little bit more fine with that. Dumbledore can see that she's.
Dumbledore
being used
can see
because
if you ask her about it, and she's just like, no, because she goes right back into like her like cards and da 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 da. But here's the thing: if you ever see her doing cards and stuff like that, sometimes she's right. She just misinterprets her own shit because she's in her place of like, I know better.
Right.
But she's actually can do it. She just can't. It's the Cassandra effect, which I think is one of her relatives, of like being able to predict, but. It's almost like instead of no one believing her, she doesn't believe herself.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Oh, that's so sad.
But yeah, that's why. It's because it's a it's a trance.
Okay, that makes more sense. I thought it was like, why is everyone putting their lives on the line?
It's also
for
why
this person who's just like creating a prophecy out of nowhere.
Yeah,
who's not very good at giving.
Did
prophecies,
Dumbledore?
But.
Did Dumbledore explain why she's at Hogwarts in that scene? Like when he's explaining it to Harry,
she was her parents or grandparents or something were great seers.
No, I'm trying to. It's
yeah,
not,
I don't think it's there.
I don't. You don't think it's. You know what I'm talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, then I won't say anything.
There's a reason that he keeps her there for because she. I don't remember.
I think it's more. It's described better in the next.
I think it's the next book.
In the next book, so I won't.
Yeah.
I won't say.
Yeah.
It's not a major plot point or anything. It's just like kind of like a little bit more of like character.
Right.
Background, but
it's just
I don't
nice
want
to have that revelation. When,
happens. I don't want
to.
Yeah, I guess I'll say that since just being around the Harry Potter, you know, talk around the world, revelation of the prophecy wasn't a big deal because I knew kind of already that Harry was like a chosen one.
Yeah.
So to
but that's
me,
kind
it
of the
like,
point, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like
I don't
he's
think
only,
it was a surprise to anybody, really.
He's only the chosen one because it's like, well. Is that in that one, too?
I think you should wait.
Yeah. I just realized. I'm like, no, that's not.
All right. Well, I guess I'll wait. But I love how Dumbledore is like, listen, I'm going to tell you, and then you can yell at me this whole time. Like, you can just tell me. And it was my fault. He has one great, great quote where he's like, it's not the fault of the youth to not know the ways of the old, but it's the fault of the old to not know the ways of how the youth used to think. You know,
that's
because
true.
I didn't want to tell you, and I didn't want to let you know.
That's a big responsibility.
Yeah. You know, and it's something that he had, and he. At some point was going to have to tell Harry and he know he fucked up.
I feel like that's
and
fair not to tell the 11-year-old like, hey,
yeah,
like a
not
big
the
murderous
worst idea.
Bad guy wants to come after you. I feel like 11, 12, maybe a little too early, but maybe once you hit that 13. Or like,
but it's hard
or maybe after book two, after you kill a giant snake, be like, you know what? Maybe you killed a giant snake. Maybe I shall tell you. I'll tell you now.
I feel like after what he went through in book one, facing the thing, then it's kind of like, you kind of got to tell him what's happening.
Yeah, but could you, honestly, like, if you saw, like, an 11-year-old child, even if you know they went through all that, because you didn't necessarily witness it firsthand.
Yeah, that's true. If I didn't witness it, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, you just see this little 11-year-old boy, scrawny kid with, like, the glasses and the hair. I would feel like, I don't think I would be able to tell, like, a kid that.
Sure. But I think a 12-year-old, you could.
I could think 12, especially after killing a basilisk and, like, dealing with poison and shit. I'd be like, maybe I should tell this kid.
yeah, that's true. That's great.
Yeah, so, it's... It's very cool. I'm getting excited to read it. You know, I'm trying to read this other book, The Shining.
Oh, you're reading
Shining.
Yeah.
Classics, huh?
Because one of my friends, he likes Stephen King, and I tried to get into it. I read Mr. Mercedes, which was the book by Stephen King.
Yeah.
I did not like it. So I had a bad taste of Stephen King in my mouth, and he was like, I love The Shining. I was like, fine, I'll give it another try. So I started reading The Shining. And
do you like it?
Yeah, I do.
I've never read a Stephen King book.
It's still a very different type of writing. I don't know if I still 100% like his writing style. I like what he's writing about right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's interesting. I like where the characters are at and what's in their head. But just like the actual technical way he's writing, it's not as enjoyable or feels a little clunky or I don't know what it is yet.
It
I
might
guess,
be just old school because those were written like what in the 70s, 80s?
Yeah, there's not like an eloquence to it. It's not very eloquent. Mm. But maybe that's his effect. Maybe that's how I don't know. So we'll find out because I'm still early in the book.
I've read one of his son's book.
David? David King? I don't know. That's not true. That's not his name.
He goes by a different pen name because he doesn't want the King name. He wants to kind of like be like, I'm my own author. But he wrote Horns.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, which is why I read it. I was like, Daniel Radcliffe's in this weird, creepy movie. Let me read the book first. And I still never saw the movie. I read the book and I was just like, this book really creeped me out. Yeah,
Joe Hill.
Yeah, the book really creeped me out. And I was just like, ooh, I don't want to see this in movie form. This is really creepy. So I never saw the movie. But the book was, I will say, interesting. It was like three different perspectives of like, and there was like a murder. I did not enjoy being in the murderer's head. Mm. That was why I was like, oh, I don't want to see this movie.
Yeah.
Because reading it was gross. It was really gross to be inside the murderer's head, which is the point. You're not supposed to like the guy.
Right.
But I was like, I don't like it here. I don't like being in this headspace.
He also wrote Lock and Key, the comic.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I did not know that.
Anyway, let's move on to perspiration because we're already in an hour.
We got a lightning round.
It might be like a 3-part series.
Yeah, lightning. Maybe.
No, it's okay. We can get through it. Because perspiration, I think, will not necessarily take as long.
Right.
What's happening?
That's a train. It's the Burbank train. It's the Amtrak train, ladies and gentlemen.
I thought maybe somebody was buzzsawing through the garage door because we're in an illegal garage.
Yep.
What if in the other spaces there were other people doing
podcasts? I'd be real happy. Perspiration. So what are we working on right now?
I'm working on Pulse LA training.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah. What's the hardest part?
I have to learn right now. I'm trying to learn how to do a Russian worm.
Whoa, what a name.
It's kind of like.
Is it the worm, but you just have to salute every time you come up from doing the worm?
Kind of, but with
your
legs.
You do the worm with it, and then you do this?
You salute with your legs, essentially. It's kind of like a breakdance move.
Interesting.
So, you know, I can do the worm.
That sounds hard.
So it's like.
I'd like to see it, but I also really don't want you to hurt yourself.
No, it's hard on your knees. Imagine a breakdancer when they do the move where their head's on the ground and their like body's kind of like almost straight up and they have like one leg up and the other leg's bent.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It's kind of like that, but like you're doing like as a flow. So you're like flowing through and like ideally you're using your legs to kick yourself up and you're doing like a weird push-up situation. And then you bring your knee in and then you whip your head up like
that
a
sounds very complicated and very hard.
It's not fun. It hurt. And like the way I can do it, if I let my knee touch the ground, which if you're wearing knee pads is fine. If you're not, it hurts real bad.
Yeah.
And our instructor, she very much wants us to not put our knee on the ground. So it's really like doing a very difficult push up.
So the Russian worm is right.
Yeah. Although it's a hard, I tried Googling it and it's like there's actual like Russian like
worms
like as well, like a creature.
Of course there's Russian worms.
Which because I think like that move's called different things wherever you go. And I think I don't know if this is what it's just called what she calls it. But it's I'll show you guys later. And if I find a link to how it looks like, I'll post it in the Slack.
You know, when I was into wrestling, I learned the worm because I watched I just said it. My God, my brain's dead.
I watched a wrestler.
Who did it as a final move. And I was like, I was like 7. I was like, I want to know how to do that. So I learned how to do the worm on a bed. You know.
That's great.
Yeah, that's.
So maybe you should get some lessons from Luis.
Yeah, I'll show you how to do the worm.
That's my perspiration right now. And it is not fun.
What is the good part about it though? Like what's keeping you going?
That I made a commitment to do it.
Sometimes that's what it takes.
That's right now. That's what it is. Yeah. I promised that I would do it, so I'm seeing it through.
Yeah.
The experience currently is not fun.
Yeah.
I do not enjoy it. We'll see how this pays off at the end. but right now I'm
in real perspiration.
I am in actual perspiration and dealing with like schedule changes and rehearsal changes last minute.
Yeah.
When you're trying to schedule your life around not only having one day off a week.
Yep.
So when you have time off, that is your precious time that you do not want to lose to more time going to a thing and trying to learn these moves when all you really want to do is play Kingdom Hearts.
Well, thank you for spending your evening with us.
Well, yeah, this is part of the joy. This is like, I get to do something different and this is fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, the perspiration of learning to do the thing and not hurting my knee and my shoulders is very hard.
Sure. So my perspiration is that our Kickstarter launches on February 11th.
Nice.
For Icarus. So we're sort of in the last, you know, prep modes of that. And so we're getting everything ready there. I'm doing a live stream on, I think it's on February. Let me look it up. February 9th, I'm doing a live stream on Happy Jacks, which is a Twitch channel.
Is that what day of the week is that?
That is a Saturday.
What time during the Saturday?
At night.
Okay, I might be able to watch that.
Between like 7 and 11.
Oh, no. Well, catch the latter half of that.
That's okay. It's all archived as well.
Okay, cool.
So, but
I want to watch it live and leave comments.
Yeah. So if you want to join us on
February 9th. I think it starts at 7. I'll put more info on Twitter and on Instagram. But I will be running Icarus for a group of wonderful role players from 7 to 11. And then our campaign launches on the 11th. So I will also be letting people know about that. But it is a mad dash.
It's the grind of getting all this prepped. Luckily,
the publisher is doing
most of the
95% of the Kickstarter work, which is a godsend.
This is how I feel when you do stuff for Ruby, where I'm like, I just want to draw this thing. Yeah. I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. And whenever there's a problem, like Spencer, I can't upload.
We ran into that this week.
I don't know what to do. I can't upload. Wait, and then you fixed it.
A page wouldn't upload.
I couldn't upload a page. I'm like, I finished at like 2 in the morning. I'm like, I need to go to bed and I can't upload this page. And I didn't bug you at 2 in the morning. I wanted to. And I was like, no, wait till the morning. It's fine. And then I was like,
we got it uploaded. It was fine.
But Spencer's my tech support for the website.
True. It's true.
What website do you use? I mean,
WordPress.
WordPress. But I'm gonna redesign it, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
It's fine.
That's okay. So I'm working on that, and then we're also doing a lot of work at Actual Work. There's been a lot of perspiration there working on getting stuff going there. So between those two things, I'm also writing Ruby, which is really fun.
Yeah.
But I've written ahead a lot on that.
Yeah.
So
no,
I think that's
you put me in a place where I'm like, oh, okay, I got this for a good chunk.
That's cool.
And I'm gonna try to let you know way more ahead of time of like when I'm running out of chunk of pages.
It'll be a little bit. It's a lot of chunk that I get. the Icarus Kickstarter is the main thing that I'm focusing on right now, and that's sort of where my laser vision has been. So
very
you,
cool. So I know you. I talked about it last time on the podcast. I'm working on a baking show.
Yeah.
It's called Baked right now. Basically, it's going to be me. Have I told you about this?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is new information.
It's all new information. Everybody. I've been watching a lot of Great British Baking Shows. And I love learning new ways to bake. Like croissant. I don't care how hard it is. I want to learn it.
Right.
So I did a croissant. I did two apple pies over Christmas break. And basically for you guys who don't know, I smoke weed. So it's going to be me smoking weed and baking. So baking while baked, and I already have a SourceFed guest who's going to be there for the first episode. So we're going to shoot, not this Saturday, but next Saturday.
Cool.
Nice.
And then it's going to be, probably like as dynamic editing, maybe as like people be like,
right.
Okay.
So I'm going to bring that in there. And then hopefully add a little bit like of science-y tidbits. I'm not sure yet.
Cool.
Just like there's, why certain things like react the way they do under certain temperatures.
Yeah, like what's it called? What is that show?
Good Eats? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so it'll be like that.
I'm like, I know what show you're talking about.
And you know, it's like the more time you spent working a dough, the structure of the thing starts to change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So you have to treat every ingredient in a specific way.
Yeah.
So we're gonna go. We're gonna learn that person's favorite thing to bake. And then it'll just be a fun way for me to learn how to bake things.
That's awesome.
And it's just like one project. I have like two narrative ideas and a documentary idea that I have in mind. But that's like an easy, like I can get that off my chest. I can get this train rolling.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I haven't been making stuff in a while because I've been in a rut. And so hopefully this will be easy. I get people just to shoot like reality based style.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Yeah, so
that's
the same
really
people
exciting.
The same people who did Will's People Be Like revival.
Yeah.
John and all them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
They're gonna help me crew. I got
cool.
a guest who's gonna be
yeah.
yeah. I got a guest they have and then that's coming and it should be fun.
That's
it's
awesome.
Be
there's
great.
There's an old webcomic that I used to read that finished but one of the main characters whose also name is Hannah.
Oh.
The character was a pothead, and she had a baking company, and her company was called Bake and Bake.
Bake and Baked,
Bake
yeah.
And Bake.
I think that was the first name I had.
But she didn't make like weed things.
Did she also make bacon? Because that would be
making
weed stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Bacon
she didn't
just,
make weed things. She just smoked while she. I was just like, oh, like Luis is doing a Bake and Bake.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like we're gonna get baked while baking.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it should be fun. You know what I mean? Hopefully, it'll go somewhere.
That's great. Cool. Are you putting it up on YouTube? Where
yeah.
Going? Yeah.
I'll put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
So
which channel?
I got a logo. I'm just going to probably make its own channel.
Its own channel. Cool.
Yeah. But then at the end, it's going to have the title card that we've been all working on.
Oh, yeah. What is that? What's it going to be?
Do you know yet? I'm still leaning on the Why Bear Why.
Okay.
Yeah. I like that. I kind of imagine like this bear ravenously like tearing apart a person. But all you see is like the bear's like maybe the person's point of view, or just like a bear scratching at someone, and then someone yelling, "Why, bear, why?" And then he does the and then he still does it. Just kind of representing a life, how just life wants to fuck you up. Yeah. And you know, it's like, why are you doing this to me? I don't know.
I'm gonna keep doing it though.
So yeah,
that's fun. Yeah, that is perspiration, making a show.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Let's circle back and do anticipation.
Anticipation. I am dreading the show, the poll show that I have to be in.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I'm going to be good at it, even with my training.
Well, okay.
And also, I don't perform. I don't like being on a stage. I purposely did this so that it's like I'm on a stage. I will be on stage with like a billion other people, so I won't be like the sole attention, which is fine by me.
Yeah.
But it's still me on a stage and in a fucking rabbit head.
Right.
And like, so it's just, I'm terrified.
I want to break you out of that, because that was also your perspiration. And this is the problem I have, that my perspiration also becomes my anticipation.
No, I'm anticipating getting it done, totally. And then I'll be like, over with, and then I could look forward to everything else.
So what are you looking forward to after
I'm
it's
looking
done?
Forward to actually focusing on Ruby, like, way more. I just want to have a comic buffer.
Yeah.
That's all I want to do. Yeah. And everything, all my time is so precious that it's very difficult for me to get it. Like, right after this show, I'm probably going to be staying up till 2-3 again to finish the page that needs to go up, because I have not been able to figure out how to get enough of a gap of time to get ahead with the comic.
Yeah.
And I desperately want to get ahead with the comic so that we could actually work on other things with the said comic.
Yes.
So I it's like I can't do that until, at least personally, I feel like I'm like, I mean like we can.
Yeah.
But I just want to be ahead of things.
I'd say, but that also requires more work from you.
Right, but it's
on
the
top.
But right,
of that.
But that's it's just but it's stuff that I want to work.
Right,
it's
totally.
What I want to work on, it's like kind of what I know, and it's like I've already had we've printed Ruby at least once, so like I know what that feels like, and it's like, oh, I want to feel that again.
Yeah.
So it's like not like a scary thing.
Totally.
It's like I want that like creative high again. So it's way more like I'm way more looking forward to that.
That's great.
And being like, okay, yeah, I like dancing. Dancing's really fun. It's like a different kind of like energy to give off. But my deep down, like it still reminds me of like you like to draw.
Yeah.
And I would love to also like have time to draw fan art. I want to draw so much fan art.
What do you want to draw fan art of?
Well, Spider-Verse. But also like I read a book called Binti that's like a Afrofuturism sci-fi book.
Cool.
That was really good. I'll recommend that to you. It's and they're short. They're both it's really short series. They're more like novellas than books.
Interesting.
But it's like this Afrofuturism thing. And when I looked it up online to see if like anybody's made art, barely.
What's
and
it called?
It's called Binti.
Binti.
The main character. That's her name.
Okay.
But it's like a girl from like a futuristic African tribe that like ends up getting accepted to a school in space, and then she like has to deal with like these alien creatures who are definitely not like people at all. Like they're like not like people. Like it's just cool.
Yeah.
It's just a cool future science.
That's awesome.
Weird thing about and like dealing with like what it means to be human or not human and like science, and it's just rad. And it's
that
from a different take
right
that's not like Western. It's like
right. Yeah.
It's just a whole and I'm like, ooh, and I'm like, I really want to draw some art. Really, really do. And I'm like, I don't have time.
I know. It's hard. It's so hard. It's time is, God, it's so precious now. And I yearn for the days where I just had.
What happened in college when we could just make all this shit? And then you realize it's because it was all bad. That's why there was time to like.
There used to be a time when the nighttime was like, oh, now I'm going to do it at night. And night lasts forever.
Yeah.
But now nighttime does not last forever
at all.
It's like, oh shit, it's 1 o'clock. I'm almost out of time. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
No, I feel that really hard. I feel like it hits 10 o'clock and I need to get ready to go to bed.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'm not gonna function the next day.
Yeah.
If I go to I usually go to sleep by 1, but I have to force myself to go
to like
get ready by 10. Yeah. Otherwise my brain doesn't shut off until it takes me hours to fall asleep. It's awful.
I try to tell myself at least get the majority of the thing you want to get done by midnight. and then start trying to like
wind down.
But like on nights like this, I'm like, oop, it'll be probably like a 3 or 4 in the morning night.
Yeah.
Which is why when it wasn't uploading, I was like, it denied me the feeling of completion of like, and this is done.
Yeah.
This page is done and over and it's out. Because I never like appreciate, like, I always expect changes. And this is just like being a creative and dealing with clients. It's like, don't ever let yourself feel like it's done until it's out in the world and published. Because that's how you end up with the files that are like final version 2, final, you know.
Yeah. Final, like, final, real final.
Yeah, yeah.
This time. Cause final.
So I've just learned never get attached until it's publicly published.
Yes.
So the website was denying me of the publicly published part. And I'm like, why? And so like I just had to go to bed really stressed out because I couldn't like.
We should try uploading another page to make sure we're not like, it's not like you're out of space or something, because before I reduced the file size a little bit and it worked. But we should just check just to make sure. Anyway, insider knowledge about Ruby. Okay. Oh, me.
Anticipation.
So, I'm really looking forward. I sort of already talked about it, but I'm really looking forward to vacationing.
Yeah.
What's that like?
I'm going to Mexico, which is gonna be really fun.
That's gonna be cool.
Going to Ixcaret. So that'll be great. And it's going to be the first time Hannah's been to the Caribbean, which is really great. I've been a couple of times when I was playing soccer, and you know, we go to Mexico all the time and play, but like this is the first time she's going to clear blue water. So we're going to go Sea Trek and Snuba, which is really exciting. And I'm just excited. I'm most excited for her to be able to experience that place, because I remember going and having the experience.
Eat
like
all the seafood.
Everything. It's all inclusive.
I know you're not like a big seafood
person.
It's
all inclusive. It's an all inclusive resort.
I love
shrimp and crab.
Okay, good. Just love eat. Please eat all the seafood. Eat all the seafood. Oh my God. It'll never taste anything like it.
It's an all inclusive resort. So we just get to go. It's all drinks included, all food included.
Incredible.
It's going to be a blast. So I'm going to go do that. That's what my anticipation is for. Luis, what's your anticipation?
What am I anticipating? Basically there's, Ethan hosts a podcast called Bad Science.
It's a great podcast.
Basically, he watches the movie and then he brings a like scientist or somebody, and they try to debunk or talk about some of the science that happens in the show, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
They talk about the science in the show and why it's bad or why it's good.
Right.
Sometimes it's good.
Like so why how enhance is completely wrong in everything.
Yeah. Why the Matrix wouldn't work.
Right.
Or
they did Jurassic Park. They did RoboCop, and they actually did one on Mean Girls. Uh-oh, that died.
Oh man. Card full.
Okay, I'm gonna say this. So they did an episode of Mean Girls where they talked about the study of like society and like the way that bullying works and how like the whole
Like pack tactics and like those kinds of
pack
things.
Pack tactics, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, oh, why are you doing Mean Girls and that? And that makes sense. So anyway, he has video podcast. He has a piano that's set up there. So I said, you know, dude, I really would like to bring my piano. I have a piano somewhere here. It's like it's probably hidden. as you both try to look. Is that it?
No, that's a vacuum cleaner.
And he's like,
just
I would really
pull it
like,
out. Like here it is.
I'd really like to take the time to like after working for a while, just go up and play piano for 20 minutes because I want to learn a musical instrument.
Yeah,
I still do. And so he was like, yeah, dude, just come on up and like, you know, play or whatever. And it's a little bit overwhelming because I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
But I do know like whenever I have a hard day or I've had this experience where I've had a hard day or something, I'll just like play on the piano.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense, but it's just like it allows me to have a cathartic experience, you know. So I'm kind of excited to try that.
Yeah.
To do that. And hopefully we can clear some space in my house because it still has boxes. And maybe we can put a piano there and I can just start practicing and start playing because that would be really cool.
That'd be
great. Yeah.
Music is just like very magical to me and it seems almost impossible to me. And I didn't realize, you know, when I first started listening to music, I thought they were just magical keys that people just strummed on whatever chord to make these awesome songs. And then I learned that they're just certain keys and chords that are already established and it's just the way that you place them, you know? And so, yeah, I just want to get more knowledge on that and get
that's
more involved.
Great.
Yeah. And it's going to be like, this is literally just starting. So who knows how long or whatever.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, again, sometimes we have to be, not that it's failing if you stop, but sometimes you just have to like do a thing and try it. I've had so many times that I just need to do a thing to try it. And I was like, maybe I'm going to love this. And then I didn't. And it was like, fine. Yeah, and you just move on. But for those of you who don't know, Ethan is also a member of the band The Cooties.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a comedy. It's a comedy band that that was they were on what? Were they on Conan?
They were on Conan, yeah.
Yeah, oh, they were on Conan just recently. Anyway, Ethan is the best. He is one of the funniest people. And just like not only funny, but so down to earth and nice and I don't know. He's just one of my favorite people.
Yeah,
in the
I would recommend that podcast. It's a very good.
Yeah,
podcast.
Bad Science is great. It's
okay,
really
I'll
really
good.
Okay,
I'll have to check that out because that sounds right up my alley.
It's right up your alley. It's really really fun, and he has guests on. He has like comedian guests on too. So it's like a bunch of comedians and a scientist, and they all get together and talk about why science sometimes
is awesome.
Works.
Yeah, the video.
Did that stop?
Yeah, who? You know, it's a oops. It's a different camera, so you won't get the end of the video podcast, but it's fine.
That's
you saw
fine.
The first
hour
of it.
Yeah. No, we're actually we're
you're
good.
Just
going to
attach
right
the
now.
Audio.
What's that?
You're just going to attach the audio.
Yeah,
to the
I'll
video.
Put the audio at the end of the video.
Okay,
because
I was going to say my mom was going to be like, "What happened?
No.
What happened?
She really looks forward to it. Like that. She genuinely missed both of you.
Aww.
Like just like
we miss
like,
you too.
She'd call and be like, "What's going on? And I'm like, I literally hadn't seen them in
two months.
And I was just like, I don't know. I'm like, I think they're fine. Like
we were alive, barely.
Yeah.
But we were alive.
We made it. Yeah. We made it through. I just want to give a shout out to John Villanueva. He's always commenting on the YouTube page.
Oh, really?
So shout out to
you.
Shout
out to John.
Shout out to John.
Too bad we're not on.
Oh, we're pointing at the camera.
We're pointing at the camera, but you can't see us, John. But John.
So used to pointing
this
at the
episode
camera.
Is dedicated to you, John.
It's dedicated to you, John.
Also, all the people who came back to the Slack after we talked about the Slack.
Yes.
All the people now on the Slack. I mean, they're still on the Slack. But like, we're just, I came back and I said something and we got in a big conversation.
Do you
I
want,
do
just
remember
great.
That.
You guys want one fresh question?
Yeah, let's do
ask.
One fresh question.
And
one
we had
question.
A lot of comments too on the YouTube video.
From Daddy, question for us. I just started learning Japanese. Me too. And was wondering if any of you have tried learning a new language on your own and were you successful? I am currently trying to learn Japanese. It is difficult. I'm not successful yet.
Yeah, my most embarrassing, worst, like the thing that makes me feel the worst as a human, story was about trying to learn another language, about my Spanish class
I remember that.
Go find whatever right, that was like
that
one
was
of the first
episodes.
Was that the first episode?
I think so.
It was one of the first episodes. Anyway, go back and listen to that if you want to hear my struggles with learning a foreign language. And the only foreign language I've ever tried to learn is a foreign language that was being created for a project that I was working on. That's the farthest I've gotten.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I
not good at it.
I grew up learning Spanish, but then as I went to school, I've kind of forgot a lot of it.
I'm in the same boat with that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So like verb conjugations are always hard for me. Just like something that happened in the past, something that will happen, something that's going to happen. All those things, it's kind of hard to conjugate. So I've been trying to learn and relearn Spanish for some time, and I think it really is like I need to,
you need to
be
just
immersed.
Practice it.
Yeah, I need to practice it. Hopefully, Sarah, my girlfriend, can like she wants to learn, so maybe we can practice it together.
We'll just go to Mexico together.
That'd be amazing. I mean, yeah, secretly we're like, listen, you learn Spanish, and then after you pass, like, you know, level two or whatever, we'll go to Mexico for like a week and just practice or something, which would be really cool. But yeah, I always try to learn Spanish. Italian would be really cool, I think. I love the musicality of the language.
I want to learn Dutch real bad, too.
Dutch
is which are so, that's why it's just like Japanese and Dutch. What am I doing?
What a language.
Yeah.
Like, and
apparently, I saw a thing about people having a really, or no, it was Danish. I think it was Danish that like natives, even people that natively speak it have a hard time doing the guttural sounds because they're so difficult.
Yeah.
That like people who don't live in Denmark have, but Dutch is a different language.
Yeah.
Dutch is like
Dutch is, Dutch and German,
Dutch...
Dutch and German are very similar.
Yeah,
oh, okay,
Dutch,
okay.
Yeah.
So like
Germanic.
Yeah, it's that, I mean, they're like right next to each other. It's like just it's just very similar sounds.
Right.
And yeah, I want to learn it because like I'm St. Martin, so it's Dutch and French, but my family's from the Dutch side.
Yeah.
And my mom knows Dutch, and she didn't teach it to me. Like,
give me some Dutch words.
Dankja is thank you.
Okay. Dankja.
Springa is jump, which I learned when my cousin would wake me up in the morning and jump on the bed.
Springa?
She would say, Springa, Springa, Springa. Springa. So I remembered that one. Those are the two
those
words
good.
I know.
All right. That's all I need to know.
And nay.
If anybody who is listening speaks a language other than English, yes. If you want to record yourself saying, we stayed late, in another language,
that'd
and post
great.
It to Slack or send it to our where would they send it? I guess we stayed late at gmail.com.
We should, yeah, that's a, you know what we should do is welcome back to,
yeah,
and
yeah.
then we could put and in then we this can person put, saying we stayed late,
yeah, exactly. So,
in
if anybody,
another language.
If anybody wants to record themselves saying we stayed late in another, actually, even if you, even if it's not like your native language, even if it's just a language you're learning,
yeah,
right
that'd
now,
be cool.
That's
just
fun.
Record yourself doing it in another language, we'll play it on the podcast.
Oh, I'm trying to think so my mom doesn't get mad. I know some numbers. Ein, zwei, drei, vier, fei, and then I don't remember the rest.
That's okay.
And
that's
that
more numbers
be,
than
and
I
And that
know.
Might be butchering it, but I just remember that as, like, my mom saying that growing up. I'm like, that's it. That's all
Whoa,
I got.
That's crazy.
I wish I spoke another language, but I'm not good at it. Okay, we are that's at an hard. Hour 20. We have to go. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Are we snapping?
I always snap.
It's the thing we do now. Right?